goes. He's gone. That's an excellent piece of spin bowling. Good work from Ben Horne. Sharp behind the stumps.
This is Through the Pickets, a podcast proudly brought to you by the New Zealand Cricket Players Association, where we showcase our members' interests, achievements and experiences either side of the white picket fence, with more of a lens on their off-field endeavours. Today's episode features a man who played for New Zealand at the Under-19 Cricket World Cup in 2012. He has scored over 3,000 runs for Auckland and taken over 200 catches behind the stumps. He is an accomplished ballroom dancer and chess player, and when he's not doing all this, Ben Horne is a consultant for a recruitment company.
Short, Horne pulls away, and that's the maximum. Great shot from Ben Horne.
You can't argue with his numbers. Two centuries in Ford Trophy cricket.
Oh my word, what a catch, Ben Horne! McKenzie went swinging, Lister too good, but the real magician out there is that man, Ben Horne.
Ben Horne, welcome to Through the Pickets. Great to have you along and thank you for taking some time from your work to come and talk to us. Now, you're a consultant for Tribe Recruitment. What does that entail?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. So working at Tribe this year, we're a New Zealand owned and operated recruitment firm. We specialise in everything pretty white collar across the industry sectors. And I do sales and marketing recruitment, mainly in the services sectors with a little bit of FMCG stuff. So trying to find people new jobs, trying to find people for employers, a bit of a matchmaking role, to be fair, kind of the life, you know, the life like Tinder, if you will, I suppose, of the employment world.
Do you feel a little bit of pressure to try and match the right people? Have you got, because obviously there's a fee involved, so not getting the right person for the job and then either they don't use you or you get a, hey, come on, Ben, this person's not working, what's going on?
Yeah, so, I mean, our responsibility is to deal in quality. We don't, you know, get our services brought upon by providing average, so we need to make sure that we're vetting candidates thoroughly, putting them through a thorough recruitment process, benchmarking with other candidates in the market, internal, direct candidates, and just making sure we can find the best person out there in the market. It's a tough market at the moment, so a lot of shoulder tapping involved. I think long gone are the days of putting up an ad on Seek and you'll get three or four good applicants. That's just not the way it is anymore. So it means our services are a little bit more prevalent, but also makes our jobs a bit trickier. So I think, you know, we've been telling our clients that, you know, last year or the year before, we might have been able to get a short list of three across and all three will be great. But, you know, the way the world is at the moment with people leaving and going overseas and doing their OEs, or locking in a mortgage and not wanting to move roles, it means if we find someone great, we have to act quickly and, you know, snap them up before they get taken by someone else, because if they're talking to us, they're talking to other people as well.
I noticed you've worked in the field right from when you debuted for Auckland, firstly Rob Walters, then PwC. Was that always the plan, that you'd have a career going along with your cricket, or just something you fell into?
So definitely fell into the recruitment side of things. Was planning obviously on having a career, but I did want to go into the sales sector. So I was interviewing with Coca-Cola to do a territory manager gig for them, got through to kind of final stages and didn't pick it up. And then I went to a recruitment agency because I kind of backed myself in an interview situation, but my CV was quite weak, so I didn't really feel like I was getting through to that side, you know, that part of the process. So kind of sought some advice from a recruitment consultant around, you know, can I be sold into some companies? Could they help me out? And then she kind of said, well, have you thought about recruitment? And I didn't know anything about it at the time. It's not really something anyone knows about unless you kind of have been through a process. So kind of started interviewing, I suppose, with them and then got offered a gig. Luckily, my boss at the time was a big cricket fan. So she got me on board and was happy for me to kind of come and go when, you know, the call came up for the Auckland Aces, and, you know, did a few stints there, moved internal with PwC, and then now back in agency in as I said, a New Zealand owned and operated business, which I'm, you know, really passionate about.
I watched their video that's on your LinkedIn page there, and they just seem quite down to earth, quite funny. They even had some of their blooper outtakes
in the back of it where they couldn't quite get their intro right. So it does seem like a nice culture in there.
Yeah, so Jenny and James started the business, I think, in about 2014 or so. So they've actually got a son, Eli, who Eddie and our team coaches for leg spin bowling. So they've got a kind of connection to cricket as well. But yeah, awesome, down to earth. I think if you look at Tribes, kind of even its branding being quite kind of cartoon-like, and even the name Tribe, it's really all-encompassing. It's very supportive. It's a welcoming environment. And it's really, you know, about putting the people first. So it's great, you know, environment to be a part of. I've got a great team that I love working with, and it's a really nice place to be.
At the CPA, you know, we're big on personal development and life after cricket, and I know you're only young, 28 or so. Is this the possible pathway for you, or are you thinking of some other things down the track?
Once cricket kind of wraps up, I'll probably start in recruitment, because that's what I know, that's what I'm good at, and that's what I've been doing. But yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought much past there. I think like management's something that I'd like to get into, which you can do through the recruitment sector as well, potentially some sort of operations side of things as well. But I think for now, I'm just kind of trying to really kind of groove my recruitment game and make sure that when the season's over and when I'm ready to get back into the office and chuck a college shirt back on, that I'm ready to go and you know, performing at the level that I need to be delivering for my clients and my candidates.
What is the dress code like there? Is it quite formal?
I'm rod and gun every day, long sleeve polo. I've got a four shirt rotation. I've got a grey, a sand, a maroon and navy, and then I'm rocking a party shirt on Fridays, which you know, is met with mixed results. But it is kind of dress for your day. But I think the thing is, when you're dealing with sales and marketers, if you roll up in a suit, you look like a bit of a fool if you're trying to sell recruitment services, because you know, that's just not what they deal with. So it's kind of, it depends on the industry sector really as well. Like, you know, guys in the accounting and finance sector might be a bit more corporate, we might be a bit more casual, but that's just, you know, dealing with the clients and the candidates that you come across.
You mentioned the four shirt rotation. You also mentioned that you've been cameoing for the Work indoor netball team. Have you been going, both you and the team personally?
Oh, it's a tough time for you to bring up that question. We suffered one of the all-time tough losses on Wednesday night. We entered the campaign halfway through the season, so the other teams have played about five more games, and we were 4 from 5 with our other result being a tie, and we played the team we tied against again on Wednesday, and we lost 27-26, came down to a buzzer beater, and Josh, my colleague, and I were pretty bitter after that, it's fair to say, and it was a slow start to a Thursday morning at work with us kind of not letting that result go. But, you know, confident we'll bounce back next week, and the Tribe Tornadoes will, you know, be pushing for playoff spots.
Sorry, I love the name. Any particular position for you? Your centre, wing defence, goal attack?
Yeah, so usually centre and attack. Josh again and I kind of, depending on who's running hot with a two-point shooting that particular night, we'll kind of alternate between centre and attack. I've been ice cold the last couple of times, so I've been resorting to under the hoop shooting. But yeah, it's just a good run around, and it's just, you know, good to be competing outside of cricket and doing something else, and you know, using different movements, but also relevant for the kind of cricket side of things as well.
Are you one of these athletes that can't turn off the competitiveness? And also, are you one of these athletes that is quite good at other sports? Like, I've met many, many an athlete like yourself that no matter what you turn your hand to, you go, oh my God, is anything this guy sucks at?
Certainly I'm competitive. Yeah, I'm not going to deny that. I think my partner Laura would also agree with that, you know, outside of the sporting sector as well. In terms of being good at other sports, I'm certainly passionate about other sports. I don't know if you'd probably, you know, put me in the realm of good, but I do enjoy racket sports or sports where I'm, you know, holding something in my hand. My footy and rugby skills are not that sharp, to be fair. But I do enjoy playing, you know, tennis, squash and badminton. And Phil, my old man, played a lot of badminton back in the day, obviously, and he still kind of dusts me up on the badminton court and the tennis court, but we're getting a bit closer in squash. But I just think, for me, it's nice to be doing something where you're engaging that competitive side of you, and there is a bit of, you know, output in that competition. You know, going to the gym and going for runs is great, but it is nice to be doing something where, you know, there is a score and there is a result.
Well, you mentioned Dad Phil, and I'll talk to you about that a little bit later down the track, but your dad played badminton, so is that the connection with racket sports? And when I say badminton, he played at the Commonwealth Games in Edinburgh in 86.
Yeah, so Phil had 3 Commonwealth Games over that 8-year period, and then he actually met Mum through the badminton sphere. She was playing as well, and they went to a Commonwealth Games together. I think they went to the Auckland one in 1990, but she played for New Zealand as well. But yeah, he was always kind of around the badminton court as well when I was growing up too, playing kind of club stuff for North Harbour. He's now club manager at Remio Rackets Tennis and Squash Club, so he's got lots of fingers in the kind of racket sports pie. And he enjoys playing tennis probably a lot more than he does the badminton side of things. Obviously, I suppose playing competitively in the back in the day. Like, I mean, I enjoy playing tennis as well. Mm. But yeah, he's pretty sharp, and I still can't get it past him on the tennis court. Or I probably never will on the badminton court. I'll never beat him, I don't think.
Because what would that be, in his 60s? Would that be?
Yeah, he's early 60s, but he moves around like a late 40s. He plays Masters badminton top level club stuff, and that's 50 over 50, so he's playing with guys like 12 years younger than him. So
wow,
he's a bit of a cheat code, to be fair.
Speaking of games, I know cricket is strategic, but you also play chess and competitively on a global online platform. So what's the story behind the chess side of things and exercising that part of your mind?
Yeah, I mean, competitively is probably a loose term, I suppose, with the chess, but chess.com is the kind of global chess platform where you can just sign up and play whoever's online at the time, which is a hell of a lot of people now off the back of the Queen's Gambit coming out on Netflix. So there's been a real interest in chess kind of reignited through the world, which is great. But I used to play when I was in like primary school, went through the wilderness for about 15 years or so and didn't play another game, but kind of started playing again off the back of the Queen's Gambit as well. And it's a great game, keeps you kind of thinking and you know recognizing patterns and, you know, planning ahead and calculating and that kind of thing. But I played a couple of games against Ish Sodhi when we were up in Hamilton, or down in Hamilton after our T20. And I know Jeet Raval is a keen chess player as well. So I just kind of like playing a couple of games like at night, just to kind of wind down before I go to bed. But it's amazing. You can just play against anyone in the world, whoever's online at the time. They'll just pair you with someone with a similar ranking, and then you're A for away, you know.
So you've touched on the Queen's Gambit. Is Magnus Carlsen someone you follow, know about, interested in?
Yeah, so we're actually just about to start the candidates tournament. So whoever wins that gets to play Magnus Carlsen for the world championship. So there's about 8 guys in that candidates tournament. So I've kind of been following who's going into the candidates tournament, and I'll keep an eye on that once that starts. But yeah, Magnus Carlsen's obviously the one to beat, but I don't think that's necessarily going to happen this year.
What led you to chess? Was it primary school or a teacher or someone at home or?
I don't know. I was in a chess club at primary. I was kind of just did everything at primary school. I think, you know, Mum was encouraging me to get as much, stuff under my belt as I can, you know, drama and chess and sports and art and all that kind of stuff, just to try, give everything a go. And I ended up being in the chess club for like a couple of years. And then, you know, if you go around someone's place and they have a board and you're just like, oh, let's have a game. And then you just kind of always remember how to play and kind of keep in touch with every now and then. And then when I saw the Queen's Gambit came out, watched that quite closely and started like thinking about the openings and how chess actually works in a little bit more detail. And it's actually a remarkable game. And it's I think someone said that the amount of positions that you can reach in chess is greater than the amount of like molecules of sand in the world or something like that.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really cool. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it at the moment.
Speaking of well-rounded and trying a little bit of everything, you had a stint at ballroom dancing, so could you explain that?
Yeah, so when I was at Robert Walters, I started doing some social dance classes with one of my colleagues there, and it was like Latin and ballroom dancing. And when she left the job to go over to Australia, we kind of did a jive for the office on her last day, which was quite cool. So we had an Ollie Murs song that we were doing it too, and we were in the lobby of the Robert Walters office and we did our kind of jive thing, and yeah, it was really cool. It was completely different movements to what I've kind of ever experienced in sport and the steps, and for the first few sessions that I just felt like I just would never be able to get these steps and understand how to do it, but I kind of started settling in after a little bit, and it was really fun. And the social dance classes that we do meant that you don't always dance with I didn't always dance with my colleague, like, so you kind of switch around, so you get to dance with different people, meet different people and that kind of thing. So it was a really cool experience. I haven't done it in ages now, but I really enjoyed it at the time.
What made you say yes? Did you say to your colleague, hey, let's go more, or did someone, how did it come up?
I think we were just kind of at one of our wrap-ups on a Friday afternoon, and she was saying that she wanted to get into it because she'd done it before. Mm. And I had kind of thought to myself, I'd be quite keen to learn how to do the salsa or whatever, and in the past. And I said, I've often thought like I'd want to do something like that, but I've just been a bit gutless and never really pulled the trigger. She was just like, well, why don't we just do it? You know, should we just have a crack at it and see what happens? And if we go to one session and hate it, then we just don't have to do it again. And then, yeah, so I was like, yeah, why not? And we went to a few sessions. So some of the dances I didn't really enjoy, like the slow ones, like the waltz and the tango and the ballroom stuff. But the quick ones were really fun and quite challenging. And again, I suppose that's the competitive streak, just trying to, you know, make sure you're continuously improving and remembering these steps and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was really good. It was random how it came about, but I'm glad we did it. It was really fun.
So like you can cha-cha or bossa nova or bossa doble or those. I'm just chucking out names now.
Oh, probably the ones that we were the best at were the jive, the cha-cha-cha. We touched on the salsa a little bit and the rumba probably. Those are the ones that we enjoyed the most, because they were just like a little bit more upbeat, faster music, and a few more steps. But yeah, the jive and the cha-cha were the best ones.
If I had a partner here for you, I'd say, okay, give us a demo, roll the camera.
Oh, honestly, to remember how to, I was literally thinking about it the other day, and I don't even reckon I'd be able to remember how to do it. It's, you kind of have to be in the moment, in tune with what you've been doing, and kind of continuously working on it. Like, I don't think I could just pick it up after a few years off.
At present, you live with your partner, Laura, who you mentioned. But before those days, you flatted with Lockie Ferguson, Henry Cooper from ND, in a flat called, tell me if I've got this right, is it called the Yeasman Hut?
Oh, it was the Yeasman Flat.
We were
the Yeasman Boys. Yeah. Yeah, we still are the Yeasman Boys. The Yeasman lives on.
Yeah, what made you decide to name your home?
Hey, look, Dennis, I would love to tell you that, but fortunately I'm bound to secrecy under the Yeasman Oath. But that was a hell of a setup we were running for a few years there. So Locke and Henry and I were quite often hosts to social gatherings and events, usually of the dress-up variety. We kind of figured that if you're going to have people around, you might as well make the most of it. So we had some great themes throughout the years, my favourite probably being what we called our rest in peace party, where you could come dressed as your favourite dead celebrity or character. So we had Henry rocking Walter White from Breaking Bad. I was Elvis, and Lockie was Bane from Batman. So yeah, it was a fun time, and it was a good setup. And the trips in to Eden Park when ND were playing Auckland, and Lockie and I were playing for Auckland, and Henry was playing for ND, were quite hilarious. You know, we'd all roll in the same car. Good luck today, fella. Not too much. Burgers tonight, though. What are you working for dinner, kind of thing? And then, obviously, you know, when I was keeping and Henry was batting and Lockie was bowling, it was pretty special. So, yeah, it was a really cool time.
Is it true, and I don't know if some of your colleagues might have been embellishing a little bit, that you guys had Yeasman merchandise made up, if my sources are correct, and even perhaps one or two of you might have even got a Yeasman tattoo?
Yeah, so I'm actually currently wearing a Yeasman T-shirt underneath my lovely rod and gun quarter zip.
Right.
So we do have some Yeasman kit. I've got a pair of Yeasman fat pants that are great for, you know, dusty weekends. And yeah, Lockie and I earlier this year picked up our Yeasman tattoos from the local K Road Otatahi tattoo parlor. So we've been chasing Henry a little bit for him to pick up the slack and get his one on board, but yeah, the Yeasman will always live on my outside left foot.
Any other sports that you're interested in, like Premier League, American sports, Formula One, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely Formula One. And look, I'm not going to say that I've followed it forever. I'm one of those bandwagoners off the back of Drive to Survive, but really, really into it now. There's much more to it than meets the eye if you're just watching kind of cars go around the track. I think the dynamic of having a teammate who you're competing against directly, because you're the only one who has the same equipment as them, but also trying to maximise points for the team. It's a really interesting dynamic, and it, I suppose, can lead to politics and dust-ups and all those kind of things. So I think that's really interesting. Outside of that, not too many other sports I keep close on. I obviously enjoy tennis and keep an eye on the majors when they're played, and kind of keep an eye on the golf majors as well. But yeah, Formula One's probably the sport that I'm most passionate about.
Do you reckon anyone in cricket might come through as a bit of a Nick Kyrgios and start breaking their bat? Having a pop. And I only say that because it was in the news yesterday or this morning or something about him and Tsitsipas, and he broke a couple of rackets. And
Nick Kyrgios is an interesting one. I think he's great for the game. And I think he's one of those guys that, like Andre Agassi was at the start of his career, was a bit of a firecracker, wild card, but he brought people to the ground, to the stadiums, and put bums on seats. So I know, you know, my old man Phil and I have had a few dust-ups around our, you know, stance on where Nick Kyrgios should be in sport. But I think if he's an entertainer and he's doing his thing and people are loving it, like, as long as he's not, you know, breaking rules and breaking laws and, you know, harming anyone, what's the issue? And I love watching him. I think he's got a great game. And yeah, I hope he keeps playing.
Let's talk a little bit about cricket with your dad, Phil, who you touched on a bit earlier, and your uncle Matt played for New Zealand. Was that your pathway into the game?
Well, I think, you know, when you're growing up as a primary school kid, cricket's the summer sport, rugby's the winter sport, that's just how it happens. Obviously, I was aware through my youth, kind of at primary, that Phil used to play. Probably the New Zealand piece didn't really kick in terms of my awareness until a little bit later when I was growing up. But I kind of came in and out of it. I gave up cricket for a few years at primary school, played a bit of tennis, went back to cricket. Phil never pushed me to play the game. He kind of has taken a bit of a backseat at times, kind of letting me do my thing. He coached some of our school teams for sure, but certainly wasn't, you know, pushing cricket upon me or anything like that. Rugby fell away as soon as I realised how terrible I was, so I started playing hockey. And I was really passionate about the hockey as well. So I'd say, you know, I fell into cricket the same way anyone falls into cricket, really.
When did you know that, you know, there was a pathway in cricket for you?
I think, you know, when I started trying to push for the New Zealand under-19 team and going to that World Cup was, you know, a really special time for me. That's when I sort of thought, you know, I'd be really keen to kind of push through to Aces level and try and crack into that team. So I suppose I went through a bit of a change after the World Cup, because in the World Cup team I was a top order batter and a bold, you know, left arm spin. But we only took one wicketkeeper. Cam Fletcher was our wicketkeeper, so I had to just be ready to be the backup keeper should something happen to one of his digits or something. So I did do some keeping training with him while we were prepping for the World Cup, and I really enjoyed it. And by the time I came back, our Parnell team didn't have an obvious, you know, keeper to take that position. And I talked to the guy at the time who was doing it, and he said he didn't really want to do it. So I started keeping, which I think for a few people, they thought that was not the best career move for me, you know, being such a specialist position, given that I'd, you know, actually been bowling overs in that World Cup. Probably could have made a smarter call, but I love keeping. I was getting a bit over bowling and fielding. My bowling was pretty limited, and once I started coming up against, you know, like men who could play spin, I was just going to get hammered. So I was keen to, you know, do something different and pursue the keeping, and yeah, luckily it's worked out so far.
Your time at the Aces, how have you found it?
It's been great. I think the really special thing about the Aces is that there's probably about six or seven of us who have played cricket together for 10 years. And even you know, when I was coming through, it was almost like we had a new wave of kind of the younger players coming through. And now we're at that position where we're a bit more experienced and you know, leadership roles and a bit more established in the team. That's been a really cool thing to go through with guys you play against at school and club, guys you play with for Auckland 17s or 19s, and then, you know, to come through over, you know, six or seven, however long it's been with the Aces, it's really, you know, quite a special thing. And I actually said to, you know, Chappie when we were walking out on the field for a one day, I was like looking around and I was like, this is pretty cool, bro. Like, we've played against, like, and with these guys for about a decade now, and we're still just battling away and going for it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it must have been nice to get a little bit of silverware for the Aces.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough start to the season for the fellas. Obviously, with the lockdown restrictions being kind of centralised with Auckland and maybe a little bit of Waikato, meant that ND and particularly us were affected at the start of the season. So we went straight into the 2020 competition, straight out of the nets pretty much in December. And the rest of our season had been kind of, you know, rescheduled to fit everything in, and it was very, you know, high energy, condensed, and, you know, just bouncing from one game to the next. So going straight into that 2020 campaign was obviously where we just weren't ready for match like intensity like that, and we were a bit wet behind the ears and didn't have a great campaign. But by the time we kind of finished that, we had a bit of a internal kind of look and how we wanted to go about our cricket and the environment that we wanted to create and exude, and we just took a bit more positivity into our game, and it started, you know, rubbing off on everyone, and it rubbed off on our performances, and we started stringing some wins together, and obviously culminated initially in that Ford Trophy win in Queenstown, which was a hell of a campaign because we won 5 games in 9 days, with 4 of them being bonus point wins, and then taking that into the 4-day sphere and winning the Plunkett Shield, which was my first Plunkett Shield, was really, really special.
You touch on switching out from you know, being a spin bowler to wicket keeping. Do you ever have any thoughts of what if, maybe if I'd gone that way or this way, or
maybe initially before I got picked in the Auckland team, but not really now. Like, I mean, every now and then I have to bowl in the nets and I just get whacked all over the show, and I was like, wow, I've made a great call here. But I just like the, you know, being engaged behind the sticks, wicket keeping, always being in the game, working the angles, having a strategic hat on, I suppose, and being able to see everything that's going on. I just like that about wicket keeping, and I wouldn't change anything, definitely not.
You're very sharp. So behind the stumps, are you constantly in the batter's ear or talking to your bowlers? Or, you know, I've heard you, obviously, they mic you up quite a bit on Spark Sport there. So how do you come up with all the dialogue?
I think when I was younger, I was probably a bit chippier and yappier and talking a bit more drivel. Not that I don't still do that, but I've always enjoyed kind of just being myself. And, you know, when I came into the Aces, I was much the same, and I just wanted to play the cricket the way I liked and the way I enjoyed it. And I think for me initially it did need to be tempered a little bit, and Mark O'Donnell, who was our coach at the time at the end of our season, he said you can't just go out and talk absolute nonsense and distract everyone from the game. And I was like, that's pretty fair. So yeah, I've kind of probably reined it in a little bit more over the last few years, but I just want to play and enjoy the game and kind of be myself, and, you know, being kind of loud and chatty and making gags is kind of, you know, that's who I've always been, and I'm not going to change just because I'm, you know, playing professional cricket now or whatever it might be.
And you're comfortable having a chat to a commentator like a Sumo or something like that? It seems like you're just in your element there.
Yeah, well, Sumo's a belter, and he's got a great sense of humour as well. So I always enjoy having chats with those guys, and I think anything that can make cricket a more entertaining product for, you know, players, spectators, commentators, whoever it might be, you know, if you can do that, you might as well give it a crack. And, you know, I know Glenn Phillips is, you know, his mantra and the way he goes about cricket is that he wants to entertain people, and that's why he plays and that's his purpose. And I think that's awesome. And as you can see with him, he goes out and he plays the way he wants, and he does all these crazy things that no one else can do, and celebrates being able to do those things, which I think is awesome. And I think that's the way it should be played.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because a couple of seasons ago you decided to run and jump into the arms of teammates. In particular, Will Somerville I seem to catch Will Somerville being jumped into his arms, etc. Some shows decided to put that into their Valentine's Day specials and man love moments, etc. Others cringed that there was an ACC claim just around the corner as Will possibly puts his back out. Now, what was the inspiration behind that sort of affection to your peers, or was it that entertainment factor?
Oh, I think it's just feeling safe in Dad's arms more so than anything. He's a great hugger. He's got a belter of a cuddle on him, so any excuse to get in those big, strong arms, I'll take any day. But, you know, Dad and I get on really well, and I think the relationship between a bowler and a spinner is really important. And, you know, we like celebrating success, and when Dad does well, I'm keen to get in his arms, and then a few of the other boys wanted to get in on it, naturally. So, yeah, obviously happy to kind of jump up and get in anyone's arms and give the boys a cuddle whenever we can, celebrate a little moment of success. And, you know, again, it's just a cool thing. And I think the Aces have a really, you know, supportive, inclusive and collaborative environment, and we're really comfortable with each other and, you know, just like being the fellas and getting around each other. And, you know, that was just a bit of a byproduct. You know, KJ was probably, he was a bit tall for me, so I couldn't get up that high, but happy to have him on my arms if he ever feels like he needs a cuddle as well.
I did watch him dodge you one game.
I think he was probably the most sensible with the potential injury around the corner, but the other lads were keen to get... there was a few times where I did run in a little bit hot. I remember getting Ross to Brack once, and he had to really brace himself because I came in quite hot. But, hey, look, you know, is what it is.
Obviously, you mentioned the byproduct. You wouldn't have minded that people were clipping it off. It was going up on social media because it did the rounds, and it was, as you said, great entertainment. It made people pay attention to the Super Smash.
I wasn't unaware that the games were getting televised. So, like, it's not like I was surprised that, you know, people were seeing that. And I didn't really care, to be honest. I thought, again, like, if you're kind of wanting to entertain or viewing something that's funny or entertaining, like, go for it. Just do whatever. And I think, you know, Glenn does that well, and he's probably the epitome of that in the New Zealand game.
Obviously, you're a bit of a character. Any behind-the-scenes stories that you're happy to share? You know, like previous podcasts we've had, Heath Davis has bowled a real pie to a batter. We've had Ross went for a visit to the F1 pit lane. I don't know, meeting any celebrities, etc.
Let me think. We had this absolute belter after a four-dayer in Alexandra, where we had a young guy, Flynn McGregor Sumter, who was running out drinks. He hadn't debuted at this point. And he was running out drinks in his Allbirds flat-soled shoes, which were kind of grey. And so after the game, we kind of got Billy Bowden on board to give him a bit of a dressing down for wearing non-white shoes, which actually is a thing. So Billy got Flynn over with our coach to kind of dress him down and say, hey, look, this isn't good enough, so it's just going to be half your match fee. And then Flynn, obviously, his first time with the squad, didn't know what the hell was going on. We were all kind of party to it, so we were watching from the sheds through the window, and Billy was putting on this absolute clinic of running him through a gauntlet, and he was like, yeah, look, we'll just have to duck upstairs to get the FPOS machine, but have you got a credit card on you? And then Flinny was like, what? No, I don't have a credit card on me. And then he was like, I see that your old man's here watching. Does he have a credit card on him that he could just pay the fine with? And then he kept it going for a little bit longer, and then finally broke character, and we got Flinny back in the changing room afterwards, and it was a belter of yarn. And when he came on the next trip, I don't think he packed the Allbirds, so that was bloody good stuff.
You touched on playing under-19s for New Zealand. Would getting the call-up to NZA, Black Caps, something you'd like to get to?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been kind of relaxed, I suppose, in a sense about that. Like, I mean, obviously that would be brilliant, but I more think that's a byproduct of some of the other stuff. Like, for me, it's kind of always been about I want to, you know, be a regular and reliable contributor to the Auckland team to push for us to win championships. And whatever comes off the back of that is a byproduct. And that's, you know, still my focus. And one of my big career goals was to win a Shield. And now I've won one, and it's such an amazing feeling, and it's such a tough thing to do. I want to win another one. And I think it's really, for me, about us winning trophies, winning games of cricket, and, you know, building a bit of a legacy as a group, because you kind of don't look back and think about, you know, the 100 you scored or whatever it might have been. You think about, you know, the nights you have with the guys after winning a championship and how cool that season was and how cool the group of guys were. So I want to create more of those memories. And, you know, if NZA or Black Caps further down the track is a byproduct of that, so be it, and I welcome that. But it's certainly not, you know, the end goal for me necessarily.
The big question is, you named your last flat, you have your own home now with your partner. Is this getting named, and is there tattoos and merchandise coming?
I think that's going to be pretty tough to get across the line, to be honest, Dennis. I don't know if Laws will be that keen on the Yasmin 2.0 or if it's whatever other name it might be. But yeah, that's a bit TBC, I think. We're going to get a dog at some point, and she wants to get a sausage dog, and she's pretty, you know, set that that's what she wants. So I've said to her that, yeah, we can get the sausage dog if you let me name it Fog. So it'll be Foghorn, which would be great. So I think that's probably, in terms of naming rights, as far as I'm going to be able to go with that one, I think.
Have you talked to Hamish Bennett about owning a sausage dog? He might sway you in a different direction.
Oh, I'll have to have a chat to Hamish. He's got a bit more time on his hands now to have a yarn, so I'll give him a bell.
So is the dog the next thing on the agenda for you? What's coming up in the next wee while?
Just continuing to kind of hopefully add some value at Tribe, you know, keep learning my craft there. Obviously cricket season's around the corner too. But yeah, no real kind of big ones around the corner, I think. I just, you know, I'm really enjoying the environment at Tribe at the moment. It's a great, you know, place to be working. It's an awesome team environment, which I think, you know, for sports players who play in a team sport, the team environment in the workplace is really important. So it's great that we've got such an awesome team. I've got a great boss, and yeah, I'm going to, you know, really enjoy these next few months at Tribe as well.
Well, Ben Horne, thank you so much for coming on Through the Pickets. Best of luck with the career, netball, chess, and of course, the upcoming season in a few months' time.
Awesome. Thanks, Dennis.
Through the Pickets is an NZCPA production. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and our members, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our website, nzcpa.co.nz. If you liked our podcast, please do take a minute to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. I'm Dennis Katsanos, and you've been listening to Through the Pickets.